Welcome back to yet another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens, below the line, with the movers and shakers, the film and TV makers, the producers, the writers, the directors, the actors, the cinematographers, the composers, the editors, the costume designers, production designers, sound mixers, sound editors, film editors, you name it, we talk to them. Oh, and we do choreographers and authors, too. Welcome. This is a jam-packed week today. And if you're listening right now live, you're listening to us on AdrenalineRadio.com or you're watching the boring live stream on the AdrenalineRadio.com Facebook page, where the only thing worth seeing is my this week's plethora and tablescape of award-worthy screeners for this past year, as we're still counting down to Oscar time, which will be in March. But so excited if you are here today. If you're catching us on a repeat in the podcast format on one of the platforms, thank you. Or you can always find us on BehindTheLensOnline.net 24/7. But today, very excited about today's show. Two incredible guests are with us. At the midpoint of the show, the YouTube, Instagram, social media, Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, actor, author, Joy Villa will be joining us at the midpoint to talk about her new film that she's an executive producer on, and it's her first starring role. So the contrast. So I'm excited for Joy. But first, we're going to welcome, he's such a good boy and such a good friend. He called in early. He's prompt. He's always wonderful. And he's one heck of a filmmaker, Mark Pellington. And a big hello, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
I am so happy to hear your voice.
Can you hear me okay? Am I coming through?
You are coming through loud and clear. Can you hear me okay?
Perfect. Perfection.
Well, you know, as my mother always said, if somebody can't hear me, they have hearing issues. But
I hear you.
I know. I'm so happy that you're joining me today on the live show. This is great.
Thank you. Happy to be with you on this lovely Monday.
Yes, Monday. But I'm even...
You're the hardest working person in show business. You watch more movies than anybody I know.
I know. George Gallo just told me, I was talking to George for a couple hours on Saturday, and George told me the same thing. He said, it's amazing.
You know the only person who watches more movies than you, or maybe watches the same amount, is Dan Waters. Do you know Dan Waters?
I don't know Dan.
Okay, Dan created Heathers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, great screenwriter in Batman, one of the early Batmans. But Dan's list at the end of the year of all the movies that he watched, and he kind of, like, ranks them, is fantastic. I'll track down this year's, and, like, I mean, I'm like, I don't, he sees everything. He sees literally everything that gets released.
Yeah, well, I know, and for 2021, a big thing for me was... I got brought on as one of the jurors and a judge for the upcoming Santa Fe Film Festival. And mm-hmm. I got brought in late. Submissions for the festival started, I think, in March of 2021 for this year's festival, which starts on February 3rd. I got brought in the end of September. So between the end of September and Thanksgiving, they had 504 submissions. Well, you know how anal I am. I watched all five. I was determined.
You watched.
Five.
You weren't just on the jury to watch like 10 or 12. You watched all of them?
I watched all of them. Because you know I am just,
oh my God.
I am hell-bent that whenever filmmakers, because I've seen it happen with so many festivals where filmmakers get passed over, they get a rejection letter or don't hear anything. And... You know, oh, well, didn't make the cut. Well, nobody watched it. And I have seen this happen over the years time and time again. And it just, and I, it just aggravates me to no end, because as hard as every filmmaker works to put together a film and submit it, you owe them. When you come on a film festival as a juror, when you say, yes, I'm going to do this, or yes, I'm going to be a judge, there's a responsibility in that. And the part that responsibility is watching these films. And I'm not saying, oh, watch two frames and skip ahead, which I know somebody, and I got into a huge argument with Film Independent about this and Josh Welch a number of years ago, because one of the guys looking at films bragged publicly in a bar that he didn't know I was there listening, that he bragged about not watching the whole film, that 5 minutes in, if he was bored, he just stopped. And
well, being a judge, my experience of being a judge is, okay, the most I've ever watched is 20. To watch 500, I thought only like the people who run the festival watch that many.
I watched them all. So
wow.
You know I'm a glutton for punishment, Mark.
Well, I didn't submit the Severing to Santa Fe, so there you go.
But you submitted the Severing to Slam Dance, and it's going to be have its 2022 premiere there sometime during during the fest, the 27th through February 6th, because Slam Dance now went virtual. So it'll be available for people to see. But this film, I am enthralled with this film, Mark. I am enthralled. You told me you didn't know if I was going to like it or not. I was mesmerized watching this. It is truly visceral. It's raw. I love the whole premise of dance and body movement. It's more body movement.
Dance is such a word to like.
This is not dancing.
Body movement.
This is not dancing with the stars. It's
physical expression.
It's body expression, expressionist movement. It tells, when you watch this, it really is a rumination on life, on grief, and getting through grief and finding your way to the other side. And with color, the way that you take us from these deeper brick reds and move us slowly into greens and teals, and then light comes into play, and green in the final acts, you know, more like rebirth. You're reborn after working through this. It is so evocative, emotionally evocative watching this. And I'm not surprised to see this come from you, Mark, because for me, this is the best of both worlds for you. Your experience with music videos, with music and movement, and your films. And you deal with these issues of grief and passing and loss. You did it with nostalgia with Ellen Burstyn. Even the last word was Shirley MacLaine. Of course, to this day, one of my all-time favorites of yours, I Melt With You. This is something you have always dealt with. So to see this marriage of your storytelling, your narrative directorial storytelling, with what you do with music videos, bring it together in The Severing, you just blew me away with it. I love it. I absolutely love it, Mark.
Well, you know, thank you so much. And I think that it was it's a different way of expressing the feelings. And Nina McNeely, the choreographer who had done Gaspar Noé's Climax, I had seen that and reached out to speak, to work with her. And the cinematographer I brought in, she was a Dutch cinematographer named Evelyn Van Rie. And she was amazing. And then my editor, Sergio Pinero, you know, we just kind of crafted it together. It was labor of love. And in a way, you can let the dancers express things, and it's pure cinema. It's all showing. It's not telling. It's just using bodies and not words, and it's letting people find themselves in it without really telling them anything.
Yep.
It's kind of similar to a documentary I made about my father and his struggle with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And purely expressive and purely showing and not telling anybody. And it was a nice break from plot-driven narratives. And as we know, it's harder and harder to get those kinds of movies financed and seen.
Yep.
So to go make this thing for, you know, the cost of a craft service table on one day of a David Fincher movie, if not less, maybe the one side of the craft service table, we were able to make this thing and let it be. So I'm really grateful to Paul Rackman and Peter Baxter at Slam Dance to let it be seen. Like you were just talking about with festivals, if this just sits on my website, it doesn't do any good. So if I can get some exposure and get some good feedback, maybe it's hard. Like, what kind of distributor might take this? What kind of distributor? I would literally give it to them. If there's distributors listening, like, they can have it.
Gravitas.
Just so it lifts, so it lives out there in the world. It can be modular. You can put it on a channel and let it be before films, you know? You know, the point is to make art and make it and get it out there and let it be seen.
Well, I mean,
that's the challenge of all these things.
Well, this is one that I definitely should be seen. And part of seeing this one, and I have to comment on his work. Your body painter, Blake Armstrong, who did...
Blake Armstrong.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Because it's not that he painted the muscular sinew on the bodies, but it was something about the strokes that he did with the contrasting color, musculature color of that deeper brick red on the bodies that you see moving. You know, muscles are working, like the heart is a muscle, the heart, you know, it works. And it's, you know, there's a sense of metaphor there about how all of that works with grief. And
the body, the core idea that I told Nina to tell the dancers, because I didn't speak to them when we were shooting, other than you're in a space, and I say, if you go over there, which is fine, it's black, it's light, there might be a little bit of changing, but, like, just know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But she told, you know, the basic story was the difficulty in when you're really filled with, when you're going through grief, the difficulty is in reconnecting your severed sense of soul to others, either an individual or to a group or at times even to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So your trauma disembowels you to a degree, where you're constantly trying to find, you know, your ripped apart self and reshape that into the larger world.
I mean,
so this completely works as an allegory for that journey that the body and soul go through in trying to re-enter the world of the living.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, for people listening, you know, it's kind of like when you get stressed or upset and you clench your fists, and, you know, you clench your fists, and as things get a little better, or, you know, if you look at your 401k today and you see it has not dropped, you know, 7 or 8 or 10%, and then you relax and, you know, your fingers start to move again. This is with the whole body. And it's just...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mark, it just enthralled me. But something that I thought was really cool that you do is you kind of have quote unquote chapters. You've got, and then sub chapters. You've got a prologue. You have the floor grounds you. The only thing you can count on. Grief. I am believable. Second, meaning life. Still life. We lose it outside of the pain, which, and I love that because that takes us into the greenish teal and light, which is very analogous to or metaphoric for rebirth and growth, coming out the other side, you know, springing anew. But I just, how did you come up with that? Did you have these PowerPoints as you went into this? Was it the dance itself that created this breakdown? How did that come about?
It was a combination. Courtney Scar, one of the dancers, came by and watched the film and began to talk about her relationship of the body to the floor. So she watched the film, and I wrote some of these phrases down. And then I had written some phrases, and I gave them all to Sergio Pinheiro, the editor, and said, if you create phrases out of it, great. You know, because he created those weird, like, little loopy, kind of repetitive body constrictions, you know, that are almost like gifts. They're gifts.
Yeah.
But those were like spasms of grief. But they're so like unnerving. So like Blake, like Nina, like Evelyn, everyone that worked on it was truly an artist that brought their own sense of freedom and interpretation to it.
Well,
which after everybody does engineered narrative films where you scout and have a script, and you know, it was great to do something that was like free.
Well, I have to tell you, I was unfamiliar with Evelyn's work before. I am just in love with what she does with light and lens here.
She's amazing. She just did her first TV show in England, and I really want to get her back here and work with her again.
Oh, I mean, yeah, just the visuals, the visual tonal bandwidth from beginning to end. You were just,
she's amazing.
She immerses you. She bathes you in this. It's not just the movement on screen, but it carries through. The way she moves that camera, the way the light is, and the way it shifts with the movement. And then you get, you know, Blake's incredible body paint. And at times the brush strokes look one way, at times they look another. And the face painting, that really, you really appreciate that when Evelyn comes in with close-ups and you see the anguish, where the head is tilting upwards and as if crying and reaching to the heavens for help. And it is pure anguish that you see. And she holds the camera and just lets the movement and the fear, the trembling in the body say it all.
Well, Courtney, I mean, I got to tell you, watching it over and over again, and part of what made it... part of the reason that I made a feature-length version out of it was this. When I watched all the dancers, right? When I watched them all, because we had made the piece for a small music video for a friend's band, right? That was the original commission. As long as I could go make this kind of piece for one of the songs, great. But it's done in 4 minutes.
Right.
And once we laid out all the footage and really respected what the dancers were doing in their dance, like each one from the first time they started to move to the end was a story. That was their story told in their body. And I said, wow, I really want to respect that. And I can watch it. Well, people have the patience to watch it. I don't know, but when you're laying it out and it costs you very little to edit it, you know, there's no stakes, right? You're not begging people for money. I give Sergio some money and time and edit it and take your time, right? So he lets it kind of emerge. And that's the thing. You can let these things emerge that you can't on another kind of narrative with narrative constraints.
Well, I know.
Or deadlines or air dates or whatever.
Well, I know after I watched it through once, then I went back through to watch certain parts over again because I was so fascinated by them.
Well, you know what? I appreciate that. And, you know, that's what's great. We need our champ. We need the champions. And I love that Slam Dance, as opposed to if we were playing it at Slam Dance, right, there'd be like two screenings of it, tops.
Yeah.
This is online. Anybody can watch it at any time.
At any time.
Which is great.
You know, and this is I have to tell you, The Severing is the perfect film for Slam Dance. It truly,
yeah.
This is the festival where this film belongs, Mark. It was very smart to submit
so.
To Peter.
Peter and Paul, you know, I've known Paul for a long time, and he said that. He goes, you know, I think that Slam Dance needs to support movies like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the only other, like, Dances with Films, maybe, here in L.A., that's a possibility for this one.
They didn't accept it.
You know, but Slam Dance would be the first, watching the film, that would be the first festival that would come to my mind. Just like watching this film about, okay, where could this go? I could see Shout Studios picking this up to distribute. This is something.
Shout Factory?
Shout Factory, yeah.
I know the guys there.
Yeah, because Shout has done.
I think it's too weird. It's too weird for them. I know them. It's too like arty for them.
I'll have to ruminate on arty distributors for you, Mark. I'll have to ruminate.
I've heard is Kino Lorber.
Yeah.
And I got an email. I just got an email because they had heard of it from IFC that they're doing stuff with Shudder. I'm like, I know IFC. I know the woman there, Ariana Bacco, is a great person. I'm like, great. You can you can have it, and then you could chop it up and use it as short pieces mm-hmm. in between your films.
This would work really well, breaking it into shorts.
Yeah,
you know, a whole series, a whole online series, or before films. I mean,
yep.
There are so many films out there like this. Interpretive dance films, films like The Severing, emotional body movement that, you know, break them up. You know, distributors are missing the boat in theaters. We need shorts before features. I don't want 40 yeah. trailers. I want the good old days of a short film before a feature film.
Well, you want the good old days. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going back to the good
know,
old days.
I know. I've outlived my time, Mark.
No, but it's people like you that need to tell people about it. And, on your show, the trailer, and just like... So, if you get 5 people that tend to whatever, I don't know, however many people go on the Slam Dance thing and are watching the Slam Dance things anyway and check it out, then great. You know, you've got to be the gatekeeper to the culture of something different.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about something different. I have to ask you about, you've got so much stuff in the works right now. Survive, which I love, that was on Quibi, is now being packaged into a film?
Yep. It's being... So it's on as a series. It's on as the series that it was on Roku.
Right.
But yes, we edited a feature version of it, and it's getting now distributed globally. And I'm finding out more about that as we speak. Which is good because nobody ever saw it. Nobody really Nobody ever saw it as a movie, so it'll be nice to see it as a film.
I mean, I liked it. I liked the shorts. I liked it.
Well, you're smart and great with good taste. But nobody saw like Quibi. Here's my description of Quibi's.
A train wreck.
Quibi, and I love Mr. Katzenberg. Yes. And he was very, very supportive, right? But Quibi's finished, right?
It sure is.
Instead of like you're at a buffet. And you like to go through a buffet and say, ah, there's the salad bar, there's the dessert, there's the prime rib, there's the fish, whatever. Quibi just threw everything on the table, right? Here's your documentaries, here's your comedy shows, here's your features, here's your everything. Just like, and everything was all mixed up. So people were reviewing the app, not the pieces.
Right.
And frankly, the Thousand Island dressing and the strawberry shortcake and the prime rib all got mixed up on the one. And you're like, how appealing is that? So it could never delineate. It could never separate itself and be seen as its own thing. And, and then the COVID and plus any new entity like that, people are sitting there with knives ready to slash it, So...
Well, then you're also working, you're turning Arlington Road, Mothman, which I love Mothman, and into series now.
That's the goal. We're a lot further along on Arlington Road because Paramount Plus.
They need content. They want content.
And is now deciding what to do with Arlington Road. Mothman is still in deep development, and I'm working with a great writer named Nina Baker, and it's being kind of shepherded by Alex Kurtzman.
Oh.
The big Star Trek guru.
Yes.
And Terry McAuliffe, who's the showrunner of Picard, who used to do 12 Monkeys. They're kind of executive producers with Village Roadshow on that. We're earlier in the game on that development, but we're super excited.
And then what's this other feature that you're going to be doing, or Clang? What is that?
Clang is my opus, and that's we're searching for actors for. I've got another movie called Catalina with Sharon Stone and Billy Magnuson that we're close to getting financing on. And a thriller, a hostage thriller called Tactics. So I hope that everything just goes one movie to the next. That's my dream for the rest of my career.
That's always been your dream.
Always a dream. But now I think I spent COVID building up this material. And I've got a couple of other doc projects in the works, too, and just keeping busy.
Well, you always keep busy in some way or another. Some way or another.
Always.
But, I mean, I'm so excited about The Severing because it is something new and different. It's not, not mainstream. It's not something that we expect to see. But knowing your work, as I do, this is a marriage of both worlds for you. And I just think it just is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Thank you. You know what? I appreciate that. It is gorgeous. And my collaborators were amazing. Really, really, really just, I feel lucky to have worked with them. And thank you. And that's what we need. We need the support for people to come out and see it. We're going to do a big screening, date to be determined, I think maybe early March, in L.A., a theatrical through the American Cinematheque, which will be a great chance for people to come and see it on a big screen.
Oh, I like that. I like that idea. But, What is this other thing? You're also an author. You're going to have a book coming out this year?
I'm crossing fingers that a book that I wrote is going to be out. It might be in the beginning of next year because COVID kind of threw a wrench into the design of it. But it's a book called The Visualist, which is kind of a memoir / process based, really anecdotes, experiences of creating narratives and making images from the early days of MTV in the 80s to now.
Wow. See, and I would love to see a book like that, Mark. I would love.
It's the ultimate, and it'll have, like, you know, tags within it where you can go put your phone up to it and go watch the piece, you know, on your phone, whatever they call those things. Yeah, no, Powerhouse is a super cool publisher, and I've written it, but now we're in the process of getting it to the next level.
Well, yeah, because you've got to write it, then you get galleys, then you've got to add other stuff, then you've got to go through publisher's editing. So, yeah. So
yeah, we're at the editing stage now.
Do you ever stop?
But again, it's kind of like the ultimate DVD commentary.
Do you ever stop, Mark? I mean, you have used all of this time with COVID and the lockdown. It's, you know, you have just been creating and creating and creating.
Well, it's easy to be really creative when you don't get paid.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And, you know, yeah, so you can be like, okay, I want to write a book with an idea. This is, you know, a couple of years ago. This was before COVID. And the right person introduced me, you know, many places past, book on music videos, and this guy, Dan Powerett, said, you know, you should make it a maker share, like about, because, you know, not many people write books about our media history, right?
That's
and,
right.
You know, me and Spike Jonze and Romantic, there's a few people that have gone from commercials and videos to movies to TV, you know, but there's not that many filmmakers over that amount of time that have jumped from form to form. So that's part of it, is that you've witnessed it going from analog to digital and, you know, everything. So you witness changes, and I'm old enough now to talk on a historical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I just believe in giving back and trying to, I think I'm always going to like to make stuff and low budget stuff. It doesn't matter. And frankly, nobody's asking me to do big movies, so who cares? You know what I mean? It's
just that's like, right.
You have a body of work, and you keep going, and you keep wanting to work with interesting people. And movies are really hard to get made. They're TV shows, so you got to keep making something.
Well, on that note, my friend, I have to bid adieu to you to welcome my next live guest today, who has
a film.
Well,
you enjoy it. Thank you for having me on.
Oh. You know, you have an open invitation anytime, and I'm still mad that you didn't come to me sooner, and I had to wait for a press blast on this one. So you're gonna
well,
pay for that.
You know,
mister.
What? We got it together, and next week you'll be the first person I call.
All right, and in the meantime, everybody can this week Slam Dance starts, and they can see The Severing. Log on, pay your
Thanks,
tickets,
Deb.
Mark. Thank you. Love you. And I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Thanks. Bye.
And that was the incomparable Mark Pellington. And talk about incomparable. I am welcoming what a true Renaissance woman, a powerhouse to the show here, Joy Villa. Welcome, Joy. Oh, my God.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. I feel so welcome.
You know, before we even get into anything, I have to tell you right off the bat that I saw the video of your performance of We Are the Champions that you put out around New Year's.
That is
the most exquisite version of that song I have ever heard.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh, my God, Joy. That just, that moved me to no end. And I think I've only watched it at least a dozen times.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you can get the song on, I believe it's on iTunes.
I already did.
Apple Music now. Oh, perfect.
No, I fell in love with that. But I am, but you are just, you are a force to be reckoned with, madam. A force to be reckoned with. There is nothing you don't do. You know, you sing, you songwrite, you have a Grammy, you know, sitting on a shelf somewhere. you write, you blog, you do a podcast, you do videos, you write books. You do everything. That's and right. Now you're jumping in with the contrast executive
That's
producer
right.
and lead actor.
That's right.
Yeah, and this is a big first for you.
It is. It's a big first.
Yeah. You know, I am curious about your how you got involved in this because last June Chris Johnson was on the show. Along with Sean, they were talking about their film Bad Detectives. So I talked to them.
Yeah.
And Chris gave me a heads up and a tidbit about the contrast and how he was adapting this 1787 play for modern day. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, how is this going to work and still and get modernized
right.
and still retain the flavor of 1787? Because you don't want to lose that, you know, that novelty of it being the first professionally produced play in the United States at that time, in the colonies.
Right.
So, and Chris kept saying, we're working on it. You're going to like it. Trust me, you're going to like it. So okay. And then I see the cast. Okay. I see you're in it. So it's like, okay. And Joy is also executive producer. That tells me something there because she's not going to sign on with a slouchy project.
That's right.
I watched this film, Joy. It is.
There what did is, you think?
It is so charming. It is heartwarming. It's fun. There is humor. But it's so authentic. And I am so impressed that not only in the setting, when the Royal Tyler Bed and Breakfast, which of course Royal Tyler wrote The Contrast in 1787. So the, this is named after him. It's a great homage. But everywhere you look, the production design, we've got colonial items. There's all the pewter trays on top of the buffet when you come in, and it's got the it has you know the fife and drum and Washington, you know well-known figures. But pewter is so synonymous with colonial America. I'm from Philly. I'm from Philly. Believe me, I know colonial America.
You know. Wow. You notice all the details.
So I'm seeing all of this. And then in the dialogue, especially through the character of Mr. Hazard, it's almost as if he was lifted out of 1787. And a lot of his dialogue and then some of the love letters that we see, that we hear about, is the beautiful elocution of verbiage that was used in those times. So
that's
preserved in here. And through it all, you are great. You're grounding this in your character of Maria. You're no nonsense. You are no nonsense. And boy, can you handle a shotgun. Let's get that out there, people. Joy can handle
That's
a shotgun.
Right. Thank you. And I actually do shoot. I mean, we had, you know, obviously movie magic, but I actually do shoot.
Yeah, you know, when the little skeet looked a little VFX-y. But no, you're shooting, your stance, holding that gun. No, I knew you were shooting.
You could see that, yeah.
this was such, it's a wonderful film to watch. It's, you know, it's not a downer. There's no explosions. It's about people. It's about truth and honesty, following your heart, family.
Yeah.
It is charming, Joy. Absolutely charming.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it.
So having said that, how did you get involved with this? And what made you say, yes, you would play the lead actor of Maria and tackle this?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such a good question. First of all, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I'm so glad that you, you know, picked up the details and enjoyed the romance and the laughter, because we really wanted to make something heartwarming, fun, and lifting people out of the whole drums.
Yeah.
You know, especially during these times. But we actually started filming the film 2 years ago, which is, you know, we got cut short by COVID, obviously. But, you know, when Chris came to me, he actually approached me online, and he actually booked like a little app. There's like this app called Cameo where you can book like mm-hmm. celebrity greetings. And it's really interesting. He actually booked a greeting from me.
What?
And in it, he asked me to play the lead character in his film he was about to do. And I thought it was a joke. I thought, you know, nobody gets asked to be star in a movie like this, you know? He, like, paid for a greeting. And I thought, it's like, too good to be true. And I just said, well, if this is real, I would love to take a look at the script. And of course, it ended up being authentic. And Chris is amazing. He sent me the script. I fell in love with it. You know, I had my own ideas. I was like, can we write Maria like even more strong like this? And how about she runs the family business? And Chris was totally open to that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I would love it if you came on as executive producer. I said, yeah. And I mean, it kind of became just natural. I asked, I said, listen, I'm adding so many things to it. I would love to come on as a producer. He
sure.
said, I would love that. He said, you absolutely are. So it was very organic that I came on to executive produce it. But it's funny because a lot of people don't know me as an actress, but I actually started doing musical theater and acting when I was 5 years old.
Yeah, it's been in your blood. You've been building to this moment. You know, and
exactly.
And you've done, you know, some tiny little one-offs. You know, granted, you've been a zombie activist. You've been, Detective Number 6. you know, but that's something that actors...
I was so upset back in the day because I said, can you please give her a name? You know, I play a detective.
No,
I have lines. You know, can she have a name? You know, and they didn't do it.
No,
so
you're
fine.
You'll forever be Detective Number 6. Or the zombie activist, you know, take your
That's
pick.
Right. Zombie.
Well, it's better than, you know, prostitute. So that was
right.
One of the other descriptions for one of your roles. So I think.
Exactly.
But
you know, it's funny because when people have made, like, even, you know, people make light of some of those things. And I'm proud to have played those characters.
Any job.
You know, even if they were small. You know, it was like getting my feet in the door. Back in this was like almost 10 years ago, some of those roles, you know, and I remember the blood, sweat and tears to get auditioned, to go there. So I retain a lot of this beginning stages. And then mm-hmm. my music took off because I just said, I'll come back to acting when they want Joy Villa.
Right.
You know, when they want me and they recognize who I am and what I bring to the table. And so it gave me the opportunity to just pursue my music, which took off and was so successful. I'm so blessed that I've worked hard on that. Now I can go back to acting with the successes I've earned and feel really good and command the roles I want to play.
And now you come back to acting with a role like Maria in The Contrast. And
yeah, that's right.
You know, I love this story. You know, the whole thing is Maria's getting married. That goes to this bed and breakfast where the wedding's going to be. And her two besties show up to be maids of honor. We've mm-hmm. got fiance Dimple, who's there. That right away, you know, this guy is trouble. That this is not a marriage.
Yep.
This is not going to be a marriage made in heaven.
That's right.
And I have to commend you and Sean and Chris, everybody on the casting, because of the fact that Lee Donahue does a great job playing Dimple, but the two of you
don't
have any chemistry, which is something we needed. We needed you guys to not have chemistry, because Maria's whole reason for getting married is it was expected, grew up with him, her father likes him, she's trying to make her father happy, which so many people go through that same kind of situation. And when you think about the play was written in 1787, well, that was expected. You married...
That was a big deal.
You married...
Yeah, your whole family vetted this person, then that you had to marry them.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to make that in modern days, like the language still would come through. So we made it like, she's still the classic traditional woman, which there's many people like that,
yes,
men and women. And she wants to make her dad happy.
But
so she wants to marry the man that she's grown up with, too.
But what you do is that we see you bring some great depth to the performance, Joy, because we see the anguish, the internal struggle that Maria is having. It's like, I don't want to disappoint my dad, but yeah, I'll marry him, but. And then the fabulous...
She's not in love with him.
The fabulous Henry shows up.
Yes.
And boy, the two of you just leap, your chemistry just leaps off the screen. You and Jermaine Holman, your chemistry leaps off the screen together. It is such...
He's amazing.
It is, no pun intended, it is a joy watching the two of you. When you're on screen. But, it's all the wedding shenanigans of the weekend. And, then we've got a little side thing going with Sean. Our director, Sean, shows up as Mr. Hazard, as if lifted right out of 1787. Through him, we really find out who Dimple truly is.
That's right. The secrets he's hiding.
He's got many secrets he's hiding. But Dimple isn't... Yep. It reaches a point, he's not doing a really good job of hiding them.
No.
Which is where humor comes in. But it's just, it's so well drawn out. It is so well constructed. Did you have any input into the casting along with Chris
and
Sean?
Absolutely. I had a huge input into the casting, actually. Coming on as executive producer, I was very particular because, having grown up in the industry, somewhat, like having been an artist, lots of experience, I knew exactly who the character should be. Like I said, the actors. And it's funny because we didn't try to make it, so multi-ethnic, you could say, right? Because we have someone of every color, of every race.
You sure
do. We didn't try to do that. We truly just picked the best actor for the role. It just ended up being really beautiful and colorful, I think, how this country is, and without any enforcement. And, the one thing I did say, though, is I said my leading man who's playing opposite of me, who's playing Henry, he's going to have to be about 6'5".
Yeah, you're very tall.
Because a lot of people don't know. Yeah, exactly. I'm 5'10". 5'10", 5'11", with any hair or shoes, almost 6 feet.
Yeah.
So I need a tall man to play, and I think that will be nice because you'll see like the physicality of us together will match more than the one I'm with. And then when it came to picking Jermaine, he was so natural. His audition was so amazing, and he had that sweetness but that masculinity that it was a shoo-in, that combination.
And
he's such a good guy.
And this is a film where that male masculinity in the role of Henry is very important. Because
absolutely.
That's also another tie-in that takes us back to 1787. Which is
It's very needed. And men were very masculine, women were very feminine. And, adopting that also, keeping the classic, because I wanted it. You see Maria, she wears dresses, and she wears her pearls, and I think it's part of her character, but that's also many women today are attempting to fit a role and dress the part and we can be trapped, and men as well, trapped in this sort of image and this classicness. And there's nothing wrong with tradition and family, but when it comes before putting your own desires, that's what we see in this film, right?
Absolutely.
She has to decide, do I just stay and do, basically she has to decide if she's going to do what everyone else expects of her or follow her heart.
And of course, we also have a side plot going with Henry's friend, Nate, who I felt so sorry for him because he's doing everything wrong trying to impress Jenny, one of Maria's BFFs.
That's right.
When she really does like him, but she doesn't want to let him know. I mean, it's like the typical grade school stuff. No, he can't know that like him. That's so cute. And to see that unfold as well. So,
absolutely.
You know, that's a nice
and
little
Antoine,
sidebar.
And Antoine, who plays Nathan, is a really good friend of mine. So he was one of the first people I called and I said, you know, I have a role for you. You'd be, because he's actually quite a huge actor in South Africa. He's on a huge hit show. He plays, it's called Legends, and it's like he plays the son, and it's huge. It's a soap opera, right, type of show.
Okay.
And before he booked the role he's in now, though, he was doing stuff in the U.S., and I said, oh, my God, you're my good friend. I would love for you to be in this role, and it just happened to be he's perfect for it.
Well, you know, another really perfect character in this film that made me laugh every time he was on screen. I'm sure you know who I'm going to say, Frank D'Alessandro.
Oh my gosh, Frank! First of all, that was Frank's first movie role.
Oh my gosh,
and
no!
He's so funny. He was a natural. He just ended up flowing perfectly. Frank actually is working on the crew. He's actually one of our crew members. And so he was doing the slate. And I don't even remember how it came around, but we ended up testing with Frank to play, you know, the nephew. And he was just so spot on and perfect, opposite of Chip, who plays the, you know,
Mr.
the
Wigner,
owner of
yes.
the Royal Tyrant. And they are hilarious together. His nephew, you know, and he's just getting into shenanigans all the time.
Frank is hilarious.
He did a great job every
time he is on screen. I was laughing because he deadpans everything, and you've got the one breakfast scene, and you've got Dimple wanting to order. Well, you know, what is this? You know, what's in this? Well, we don't have it.
We don't have that.
Well, give me Eggs Benedict. Okay, we don't have that. Well, then what do you have? He goes, cereal. Cereal. All right, bring me cereal. Well, you're going to get the worst rating I've ever given anybody. And it's like, and then he gets the cereal and, you know, it's like, well, where's the milk? We don't have any milk. And he deadpans everything. So, and
he does.
He is
so good.
He's unflappable. So good. No matter what's going on, he's unflappable. But this is, this is such a well-crafted cast, Joy.
Thank you.
It really is.
I mean, you know, also have to say Deanna Rochelle. She's one of my good friends. You know, she's the one with the love triangle.
Yes, she's Charlie, the BFF.
Charlie, that's right.
With the big secret.
That's right, without giving too much away. She does, and she's somebody that I had met, and amazing. And so I said, oh my gosh, we'd love to do a screen test for you, and I brought her, you know, to Chris, and everybody that I brought, Chris would just totally trust my judgment, and being able to work with someone like that who has that much faith and trust in you, and, you know, he created this project, he's the one who found me to be a part of it. It was such a beautiful, like, family atmosphere because of that. You know, it always comes from the top.
Yeah.
And all of us got along. You know, behind the scenes, we'd always be constantly laughing, you know, in the makeup chair, grabbing coffee in the morning. We'd be, you know, Lance Nichols, he plays my father, and he is, he plays the preacher. He's an incredible actor from Benjamin Button.
Yep.
You might recognize him from that. And he was like a real dad behind the scenes. He actually still talks to me, calls me and says, hey, it's your dad calling, you know. Just beautiful.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, so sentimental. Like, you wouldn't believe the kind of care and love and just support that was happening behind the scenes.
Well,
and that, I believe, makes it show off to be even more heartwarming.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the behind the scenes, because this is another reason why I always tell people, watch the credits. Stay and watch the credits because there are some great behind the scenes outtakes in the end credits.
That's right. That you can see the atmosphere of the film, and you get to see some of the cast, and you get to see some of the crew, which, you know, the crew never get enough credit for creating things, but we had amazing people behind the camera as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're behind the camera. You've got Liz Hammer as your cinematographer, and I have to compliment the cinematography, her work, and the cinematography on the film. It because the visual tonal bandwidth is kept nice and light and bright, but then navigating within the bed and breakfast, within the building, you know, itself, there are very narrow doorways, small rooms. That's really challenging. And then to light it and keep that light tone, the visual tone, physical visual tone itself, as well as the emotional tone, but the physical tone with all that really heavy, dark wood, almost an ebony colored wood in there, that's really difficult to do.
You know your stuff because it was not easy to light in there, and Liz just kept it in the consistency. And we had multiple skin tones, which is not easy to light. You know, you have Jermaine who has the rich, deep skin tone, and then I've got a medium skin tone, and we both have to be the same lit in a scene, right? To where I can't look too light, he can't look too dark, and just knowing that. And then we have daylight scenes. Those can't be too bright. It has to match the interior. Yeah, hats off to Liz and the whole crew setting up.
Really?
I mean, she's amazing. And I got to say, too, I'm all about diversity, but I'm against the enforced diversity. I think there's a lot of focus on you have to hire 50% women, you have to hire this. And I think that changes and goes against the creativity of a project rather than just hire the best person for the job. And we had about 50% women behind the crew as well, without trying. We just hired the best person. We didn't make any woke culture. And it ended up being so diverse.
That's my mantra. That is what I've always said. It should always be the best person for the job. Because if you've got the skill set, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, black, white, from Mars, purple, polka dotted. Your voice will come. Your voice will come through in the work, you know. And it's always about you want the best. I mean, you even have Christina Davis. Yeah. You've got a female editor on board as well.
That's right.
So,
and that rarely happens. There's not, you know, you could arguably there's more male editors out there. There's more male director photographies out there. You know, we had such a good diverse, and I think that also made it very relaxed because we had men, women, we had New York, we had, you know, Chicago, L.A., we had Northern California, with people from all around, New Zealand. Lee Donahue is from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. You would never tell his accent. He's got that American accent. Perfect. You know, we have South Africans. Like, I think we have someone from almost every continent in this film.
And let's not forget the cute little black feral cat that went trotting across the screen in the front yard.
Yes. I know, the kitty. I think that was Midnight was the cat's name, if I remember correctly. It's Midnight.
Okay.
That actually belongs to the people who own the home, which is a wedding venue, actually. The home that we rented for the film is a wedding venue.
Oh, I can see that. Oh, absolutely. But that's my one gripe, Joy. We didn't have enough of the kitty cat. Okay? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I hate to say it. But, you know,
we needed more cat. You're right.
More cat.
Reshoot. We're going to add more cat.
That's it. Just that little cat, because he was so adorable. But, you know, I have to ask you, being the fact that you are the lead in this film and executive producer, and as you say, you know, it comes from the top. So this does put kind of a burden on you. Did you have any trepidation about stepping into this, because you also have two songs in here that you sing as well.
That's right.
So, but I'm curious, did you have any kind of trepidation about tackling something this big?
No, I didn't actually. I didn't because I've prepared for this my whole life. You know, it's just as a performer, I rehearse, I get ready. You know, I would say the trepidation of it would be the now that it's like out, you know, to make sure audiences love it as much as we loved making it and enjoy it. But it's not trepidation. It's more like excitement and expectation. Mm-hmm. I mean, with it does come, it was challenging in some parts. But, you know, when I had challenges in the script as a performer, Chris let me change the lines. I said, you know, I feel like she would say it more like this. I feel like this is a little bit clunky. He wouldn't mind, and Sean wouldn't mind, you know, and, you know, all of them didn't mind when I would just change lines a little bit. You know, and I think that having that freedom made me feel like, oh, I'm part of this creation. And being executive producer, you know, I got to be a part of the film in mm-hmm. a way that I could take even more responsibility rather than just being a performer. And for me, I love that. When I can come in, you know, because I'm like, I'm a boss babe. I like to come in. I like to help out in all aspects, you know. And that means you're really serving the creation. You know, people yeah. think, oh, you're a producer. Everyone's going to kiss your butt. No, it means you actually have to be willing to do whatever it takes to help the project be the best it could be. And I love that.
Yeah.
And having my music in the movie, that had to happen. Me being a singer-songwriter, I had to have the songs in. And Chris loved loved that idea. Of course, he's like, you got to have your music in here. And I said, yeah, you don't have to tell me twice.
Well, the two songs that are yours, The Darkness and Lost, they fit.
Yes.
They fit the moment, you know, what's happening in the film, the emotional
yeah.
journey that Maria's going on.
That's right. That's yeah. right.
Yeah,
so, and I actually wrote these songs years before the film came out.
Look
so
at that.
It's so cool as an artist to see that. And Lost was so, you know, I once was lost in the world, you know, and that was Maria. She was lost before.
Yeah, because she was so intent on making her dad happy and living up to that expectation that she wasn't thinking of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
that's right, and that happens a lot.
So Maria got a little bit lost, but then she got found by Henry. It's no spoiler to say, no.
I know, I'm going to say spoilers. But you can kind of see where the film is going. It's a rom-com, so it's got to end
yes.
positive note. You know?
So, and as you said earlier, you know, we need films like this. We need these positive, happy films.
Yes.
You know,
happy films.
It's like
it doesn't all have to be dark and dramatic and scary. I mean, I watch some dark stuff too, but you know, when we went to the American Film Market, the whole company went, Chris and all of us, the directors and the producers, and I went along, and we heard that there's a lack of romantic comedies, and there's a lack of comedies and lighthearted films being created right now.
That's so
everybody's true. Going dark.
Yep.
And that to me just shows how important it is to make a lighthearted, fun, feel good film.
Yeah.
Because I don't want those to go away. We need that too.
Well, and
we need the balance of everything.
Well, and especially in darker times and, you know,
yeah.
going beyond 2 years with COVID and the pandemic now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
mandates and lockdowns and frustration.
Oh my God.
And, you know, people forget that this is how Shirley Temple became a star. Because of the Depression,
yeah.
and it was an executive order signed by the president that instructed Hollywood to make happy movies so the people
wow.
could take their mind off of, you know, not
yeah.
having money. And, of course, I said this to Mark Pellington, you know, my first guest today. It's like, well, you know,
yeah.
don't look at your 401ks today because with the stock market and what it's doing, you know, we need a happy movie to take our mind off of things
oh.
right now.
Yes.
I think this is why I'm so happy that Tyler Perry is bringing us a new Madea movie.
Yes,
after
he does those so well.
Well, after he said he wouldn't, and now he is.
I think that Hollywood is moving towards the happiness again. Like you said, we are in a recession. We're in a, you know, a sort of depression. and we need more musicals. Musicals came yes. back in Hollywood.
Yes.
I want to see more musicals, happy, feel-good films.
So now, with that, having said that, can I look forward to you possibly doing a musical in the future?
Well, when I said that, I thought, I need to do a musical. Well, absolutely in the future. I don't have a musical in the plans right now. But as far as in the future, absolutely, I have to do a musical.
No.
You know, even if I have to write one myself.
Oh, there. There's a new project for you.
That's right.
Now, do you have any more features on your plate coming up that you're looking at?
Well, there are some. I'm looking at scripts right now. You know, my focus has really been promoting The Contrast and mm-hmm. making sure audiences get to see it and love it. And I have some other music thing that I'm working on. I'm in the UK working on some music right now, but there definitely will be another film in not too long. I'm looking at scripts and deciding on the next project.
Well, I, for one, I cannot wait, but you know, unfortunately we are all out of time, but before I let you go, Joy, I do have to ask, did you get to read the original 1787 play?
I did not. I should have. That would have been great.
Well, no, now that it's done. No. After, you know, not before, because that might have influenced, either confused you with,
yeah.
or influenced you in how you brought Maria to life. But I was yes, just curious
true.
If, you know, post-film, if you mm-hmm. had read it.
I haven't, but that's a good idea. I have to put that on my to-do list.
You know, just
for sure after.
Out of curiosity, you know, just to see how the adaptation real, you know, what went from,
yeah.
how you got from point A to point B.
Well, in some of the earlier scripts Chris sent me, there was a lot more of the original in there.
Okay.
And I actually worked with him to modernize a lot of the language and some of the things I said, well, listen, modern audiences are probably not going to get this. So I did read, you could say I read a good portion of it, but not in its entirety.
Well, one thing
that's a good idea.
One thing that we all will learn watching The Contrast is that bathrooms are called Dog and Bone.
Exactly.
Just saying.
The old Dog and Bone.
See, you learn, you get entertained and you learn new things at the same time watching The Contrast.
That's right.
Oh, Joy, this has been such a thrill, such a delight to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
I hope you'll come back again in the future.
Absolutely. My next project, you guys are going to get an exclusive. This has been a beautiful moment for me as well. I love talking to someone who really put their heart and soul in looking into the film, and you know your stuff, so it's so fun to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. And truly, an absolute, because I'm such an admirer of your work. So be able to speak with you today about this film in particular, which is a big leap for you. I'm just so,
yes.
I'm so excited. So happy.
Thank you. You're on the journey with me.
Oh, I love that journey. Oh, Joy.
Yes.
Well, you have a wonderful evening in the UK, since
me
I know it's
too.
Evening there now.
And it is, yeah.
We will talk again soon.
Absolutely. All right.
Thanks,
bye.
Joy. Bye-bye. And that was Joy Villa from the UK to talk about her new film, The Contrast. It is out now. It is available now digitally. So that is all the time we have today. Of course, we ran over. We always run over. That's because I love our filmmakers. I genuinely do. And they deserve everybody's support. You can support Mark Pellington's new film, The Severing, Slam Dance Film Festival. Starts this week, virtual, 24/7. It's either slamdance.com or slamdance.org. The Contrast, available now. I encourage you to see both. The Severing, though, it does require, pay attention. The Contrast, you can just enjoy. Next week, Steve Balderson is going to be with us to talk about two new books he has and Alchemy of the Spirit before it premieres at Santa Fe Film Festival next on the week of February 3rd. busy, 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 people. So until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.